recording wasn't going. So I'll just say, okay, it's April 25th. We're here with Swami Satchidananda and we're talking about mandalas. So this is our, that's our quick introduction now that we're actually recording. Okay. So Swami, thank you for being here. How did you get into this mandala topic? What attracted you to it?
Oh, I was mystical by nature. From a very early, you can say, boyhood? Yeah, that's the right word. And I kept on exploring different avenues of mystical thought. And at one point of my life, I also wanted to be a Buddhist monk. And, you know, Buddhism is full of mandalas and mandalas. So I did study a little about mandalas. But then, you know, I came to Vedanta. And then now I look at mandalas through the Vedantic perspective. So it has given me a whole new outlook on this old ancient science of mandalas, which I hope I could convey to you all today. And the key word to be understood in, I'll use a Sanskrit mandala instead of mandala, okay? The key word to understand in mandala is order, pattern, which is distinct from chaos. This world appears chaotic and the mandalas are ordered. It's a pattern. And the mind recognizes patterns. It's a pattern recognizing mechanism that we already have. The word mandala comes, you know, from the Sanskrit word, which means mand, in which a deity dwells. It's a location where a particular deity or divinity dwells. And that's the reason why we have the other word also for temple called mandira, from that same word.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And doesn't man just by itself mean mind? Because like mantra is another.
Yeah, that's another. That's another aspect of mandala, actually, mantra. I'll come towards that.
Okay.
Okay. So the earliest book ever written by humankind is a Rig Veda. And in the Rig Veda, the chapters are called mandalas. The first mandala, the second mandala, third mandala. Now, there are words, you know, when we speak in any language, the words reveal a part of existence or reality. All words. But there are some words that reveal more of the reality. And the most comprehensive word that speaks of reality is the word mandala. It's the most comprehensive word. I mean, it encapsulates the entire idea of existence. Now, when we talk about mandala, what does it mean? Now, it's cyclic nature. This cyclical nature of things is evident everywhere. There is a dynamism in nature. Something like the yin and yang. It's always, every part of existence is related to every other part. There is no part as separate or disparate. You cannot take one part of the universe and say, and isolate it and say, this is something separate. It can never happen. It is the whole, it is the integral. It is the perfect rhythm. And it is also, can say, the idea of mysticism. But when we talk about the mandalas, we'll have to discuss the mandalas according to its functions. You can never destroy a mandala also. There are exercises which we hope we can try to do it when this pandemic is over. We draw a mandala and then we gaze at it for a while. And then even if we destroy it with a fire, with a kind of candle flame held in the center, and the whole mandala, the paper, the burn, it burns. You can destroy its gross aspect, but you can never destroy the subtle aspect. It's always there. The mandala is always there, indestructible. So this cyclical nature of things is apparent. In fact, the sadness is, we can recognize it subconsciously, but our conscious mind at times just wants to know the sequence of things. Mm-hmm. We see this world and we want to know what is transcendent or what is God. And we separate God from the creation. We separate the doer from the work. In the science of mandalas, no. The creator and creation are immanent. They are embedded within creation. And this is the first principle of mandalas. That the reality, the truth is embedded here in this, what you see around. If you can recognize the patterns, you will be able to follow it gradually to its center. And that was always a Western idea of thinking. You know, the prime mover, the outside agent, and slowly in the Semitic, you can say religions, you had a God which is completely separate from creation, in some way outside. The mandalas bring that God back inside here. And that's the reason why, principally in the philosophy of Hinduism, Shaktiism called Shakti, the tantras, the divine mother is immanent here, inside, and there can never be a kind of a separate existence. Now, when you talk about mandalas, so there's always, like I said, there's a flux and there's a balance. Both these states are present. And it is within time, and yet it is beyond time. It's timeless. It's dynamic as well as static. It is a mixture of consciousness or spirit and matter. It is both at the same time transcendent and immanent. So when we encounter ourselves, we will find ourselves as a mandala. Mm. Oh, yes.
That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. So what happens is we are, as it were, a microcosm of the macrocosm. If the world or the earth, the solar system, the galaxy and the universe is like a giant design, a giant mandala, we are a microcosm of that huge, vast microcosm. It essentially follows that we are also part of that. So if that's a mandala there out, there's a mandala here.
Mm. Okay, so I need to ask you a question. So the Sri Yantra is a mandala, right?
Yes.
I have a picture of one on my wall. Let me get it. I'll show you.
Ah.
Very handy.
Oh, yeah.
So this, which if I put it, can you guys see it?
Yeah.
So this is pretty famous thing, right? Yes. I have heard that this is a visual representation of the mantra Om. Is that true?
Yes, not only mantra Om. You see what happens is, suppose, you know, it's like that. You've heard about music and resonance. Suppose you spread, take for instance, flour, wheat flour on a flat surface, and you keep a musical instrument or something beneath it, or just touching that flat surface, you will find all the grains forming into a pattern. Sound is a pattern and it pulls things away. So Om also is a sound, it's a pattern, and the whole universe is patterned around this. Okay, so you see, our body, as I said, is a mandala. The life force, prana, is a mandala. The mind is a mandala. Yeah. And now what happens is, this in Vedanta, they say, consciousness takes the form of intelligence, memory, even ignorance, and deliberation. All these are four factors of embodied consciousness. And all these factors are responsible for putting things in a pattern. Now what happens is, as you said, is the body a mandala? Oh yes. You know, Leonardo da Vinci's, you know, the Vitruvian Man.
Right.
That is a mandala. There he had that kind of idea. In tantras, they say we have these centers of consciousness. From the Mooladhara, and then we have the Anahata, we have the Vishuddha, we have the Agnya, and we have the Sahasra. Each center of consciousness is a mandala.
You're talking about the chakras.
With its own, yes, that's a chakra. That the is chakra the mandala.
Is a mandala. Okay.
The various chakras. This is the 1,000-petal lotus. That is a form of a mandala, the 1,000 petals. This Agnya is also a pattern. It also has a sound. The sound brings out the particular pattern.
Mm.
So we have maps of consciousness within us, and meditation is nothing but a resetting of those mandalas in sync. You know what happens is, it's right now it's out of sync. If you can sync all of them, actually if you can sync just one, the Mooladhara in the sacral plexus, that energy as it keeps on whirling, it awakens the next mandala, the Swadhisthana. Mm. And each, like I said, has its own Bija mantra. Bija mantra is seed sound. It's either lung, or vong, or rung, or bum. These sounds can be heard and the colors can be perceived in the internal world as we meditate. So this is a map of consciousness. This mandala is a map of consciousness. Well, suppose we misused the mandala. Well, there, you can't misuse it because there is something called the order out of which it has arisen from chaos. If you misuse the mandala, like for instance, in Nazi Germany, we had the swastika, which is a mandala. Yeah, it's within a circle. But they did it to the opposite side, anti-clockwise. And what happened was, we know, it's destructive power. So the mandalas have that creative, you can say, power as well as its destructive power. The idea is to use its creative powers. Like the Big Bang, it's a starting of that mandala. And the whole universe patterns around it. And everything comes out as a kind of evolution. Matter, as it were, is evolving from the you can say, fine, and becomes gross and gross and gross. And then the laws of nature take over. So this deeper significance of the mandala will only be revealed in the depths of meditation. Mm.
Is there a difference between a mandala and a yantra?
Yes, I'm coming down to that.
Okay.
Swamiji, one quick question. That alpana that we use in Bengal, that pattern, has it anything to do with mandala?
It should be technically be done as a mandala, but people kind of do it in a kind of a line or a sequence or something like that.
But oftentimes it is in a circular form.
Yeah. But then there is no such thing as a straight line forever infinity. It's cyclical. So if you push that straight line for a long, 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 long time, it will end up in a circle. So it's part of that circle. Mm-hmm. Now, to take up Parama's question about yantra. Yantra technically means an instrument or a machine. And you will find in the Sri Yantra, as they say, the one that it's like you have a circle inside and then you have a border outside.
Yeah.
Okay. Or, you know, something like this also. Like Paramasura.
Yeah. Like this one. It's a bunch of triangles and triangles within triangles within triangles.
Yes.
But at the very center, there's like a little dot, which is a bindi.
Except that's called a bindu.
Yeah, bindu. Okay.
So now in this, what happens is the yantra, which is an instrument, is always associated with a mandala. The mandala might be circular, but a yantra has to have a gateway.
Mm.
So you have to have a square. And in the center of those squares, you have those four gates through which you enter. Depends on your personality type, you enter through one of those gates. And here it is, how do you enter? With the help of a mantra. So yantra and mantra are connected, as well as it is called a tantra. Tantra means, you know, they say tantra, it's a set of books. It is not a set of books only. It is nothing but reality spoken of in terms of its patterns and significance. Tantra means tan, that is to spread, that which spreads, and that which protects, tra. Tantra, that which spreads and that which protects. So we approach one of these gates. How do we approach? With a mantra. And how do we know what exactly is which direction we have to take? it depends on your meditation. Mm-hmm. As you go inside, you will see some lines which are taking you to the center. And as you follow those lines, you will find the actually the lines, your psychic lines of your own psychic personality. These will be discovered only through deep meditation. And as you meditate, your mind will gravitate on those particular lines towards that center. The center is, as it were, the seed from which emerges everything and from into which everything merges. So they say, Bindu me Sindhu, you know, you see the ocean in a drop of water. Your real knowledge is that. So here we have, it is the, while creation, it is an emerging from the center and according to a pattern. And if you want to get away from creation, you have to reverse that journey back to its center. Mm. Now, in this one whole year, we have found so much chaos, so much of, you can say, disturbance, social disturbance, political disturbance, economic disturbance, everything is disturbing. You know what it means? Carl Jung, who really popularized the science of mandalas in this age, apart from Tibetan Buddhism and all these things, he found that when the mind is in a chaotic state, the mandalas are disturbed. So he used to have patients draw mandalas when they are in a disturbed state of mind. And you could see there was no pattern. It was a chaos there. And then how did he cure them? Nothing. He only made them fix their gaze or attention on a mandala and do nothing. Just fix your gaze. Follow each line with your vision and enter into the center. He did nothing but that. And then he made the patients draw their own mandalas and found that there is now a balance and order coming in that mandala.
Wow.
They were getting rid of their chaos, their mental disturbances.
Did so Jung mandala study there, Vedanta? I mean, it sounds like Jung studied Vedanta.
Not in Vedanta, but it is in Hinduism in a way. You focus here and it is a therapeutic tool. The word therapeutic also comes from the word therapeutic, which was, you know, the sect of which John the Baptist was. Thera, it comes from the Buddhist word, Thera means elder. Putra is son. Those in Buddhism, the elders were called Theras, Thera in Pali. So they were a sect of ascetics with possibly links to Buddhism, because Buddhism at that time had spread down to Alexandria and all this. So they had contact, it had contacted Greek thought. So come back to therapeutic. It's a therapeutic tool, mandalas. Just focusing on this will calm your psychic and your psychological aspects of your personality. So it's a very powerful tool also. It needs guidance, but everyone can go through this. So what else? Mandalas is, as you said, a circle, and a circle is perfect. Perfection. Mandalas are representations of perfection. There cannot be any other thing. So if you see the history of humanity, your culture, or civilization, or anything, whatever, it rises and falls, rises and falls. But if they are rooted in their center, they rise and fall in a pattern. Everything, not only his, our life also follow the pattern. Every cell in our body is a mandala. Why even the coronavirus is a mandala? So it is this balance. This whole universe is nothing but disturbed balance, and it wants to come back to its original, you can say, state. It's like, you know, you disturb a body of water, like you go to a lake and throw some stones inside. And then what happens? You will find a pattern emerging. And slowly it goes towards the banks of the lake, hits that bank, and again comes back. And that also is a pattern. But the incoming and outgoing waves clash. And that's what brings it to chaos. But then again, the waves want to get back to its original state of balance. So this whole universe has emerged out, as they say, and it is in the state of entropy. It is going back to a state of balance. The origins, the center, the Big Bang was perfect balance. Mm. And what we are seeing now is a state of being who wants to go back to its state of balance, whole of nature. That's why these two powers called Pravritti and Nivritti. Pravritti circling forward and Nivritti circling inwards. So both these forces keep the universe alive. And as we tend to come back more to our center, more in the Nivritti, you will find yourself, as I say, yourself manifesting more and more, your consciousness manifesting more and more in a pattern. Now, when we talk about the yantra and the mantra, these are like the various tools within the tool of yantra. You, in that, a particular deity dwells. It's not a simple diagram anymore. It is a diagram of the particular divinity or the deity. Suppose I want to represent Durga. Fine. I can paint her with 10 hands or 8 hands and with all the weapons and all these things, and she looks so beautiful riding that lion. There's another, you can say, depiction of Durga. I can depict her in a diagram. So this image of Durga is a symbol. The yantra is also a symbol. And the whole process of Sri Yantra is meditating on that Sri, that Devi. It's a very powerful tool, and it is only given by a teacher to the disciple in a kind of an esoteric tradition. That was one of the things that Shankaracharya did away from the Advaita, you can say, philosophy that he propounded. He developed this Sri Yantra. The one you have, you showed it, that's a Sri Yantra.
Oh, so this is Shankaracharya?
Yes, he discovered this Shankaracharya.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, so these two intersecting triangles.
You know, yeah.
Creation, and then you said Shiva and Shakti, all these. It's a confluence, a congruence of Shiva and Shakti. Mm. And that is what slowly will lead us to the inner Bindu. So you travel down those lines one after another from the outer, you can say, fringes. It goes down deeper and deeper and deeper down those lines, and then we get into that center.
It's right here. So the triangle is pointing down.
And oh, yeah.
A little dot there. And then there's petals all around.
Right, right. These are the petals. Even the various chakras are shown as various petals.
Yeah.
4 petals, 6 petals.
Let's talk a little bit about that symbolism, because there are certain patterns that recur within mandalas, right? So there's like a square or a circle or a triangle or a dot or a petal, or, you know, there's different symbols. So what do each of those represent?
It depends on the particular, either if it is a Shiva, you can say mandala, you will always have pattern slightly different from the Shakti. Now, if you combine both, then you have a different mandala.
Mm.
Every god or every deity has his or her own mandala.
Mm.
So the idea is, who discovered this? It is discovered by the in the deepest meditation by the rishis.
Mm.
And depending on the time, place, and circumstances, the mandalas also change their configurations.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Suppose you are meditating on this Sri Yantra in the morning. Okay, that's good. But if you meditate in the afternoon, the mental pattern will be slightly different.
Mm.
And the evening, it will be slightly different. Night will be slightly different. That was the theory behind the Indian music called ragas.
Mm.
Every part of the day, every mood has its own music. You cannot play a morning raga in the afternoon, or in the afternoon raga in the night. Is disastrous. Similarly, when we have to meditate on a particular mandala, suppose the Devi mandala, you do it at that particular time. And as you meditate, what happens is the power of the mandala takes over after some time.
Mm.
It's like, you know, you put your hand in a machine and you're pulled inside, you know? Something like that. You enter inside and then you slowly move inside. You can't get out of it. So all our lives, our cells, even our life cycles are mandalas. We emerge from that and go back to that. The whole thing, you know, Sri Ramakrishna, one time, he prayed to the Divine Mother, show me what is Maya. And he says, I saw a point of light in my room. Nothing but just a point of light. And that point of light slowly started growing larger and larger and larger and larger till it filled the whole universe.
Hmm.
This is the mandala. Mother creates this universe as a mandala. Start from a point and it spreads out the whole, you can say, universe. This is the secret. You know, Swamiji also says, if you throw a rock up in the air, it goes into space. If you live long enough, it'll come back to you. So this whole universe has emerged from that and it is going back. There are some people like us who like to go quickly. Oh, well, what? Yeah, then you follow a kind of a, you know, in the old days, in the French maze, you know, you had these mazes, you know. You get into the maze and then you try to find your way to the center. Exactly like that. Mandalas are exactly like that.
Yeah, I have a labyrinth in my backyard.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not a maze. You follow the path and you get to the center. You follow the path and you come back out again.
Yeah.
So you can't get lost.
There you are.
Also, I wanted to ask, I think there are different mandalas for each planet too. And it can be like, depending upon your astrological chart or whatever, these mandalas can actually
Astrological chart is a mandala. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
And it can actually be prescriptive. Like a Jyotishi might tell you, well, you need the Saturn mandala now to meditate on or whatever.
So the whole astrology, the 12 signs, nothing but the whole the mandala. There you have. You can't escape it. It is there everywhere. You just need to look a little deeply and you'll find, wow, it's here, it's there, it's everywhere. This whole, you can say, state of being is this. This is the mandala. And it has great implications for us also. We need to kind of have a pattern, a thought pattern. The very act of repetition of a mantra is nothing but creating a pattern in one's mind. Life itself, like prana itself, is a mandala, and whatever its manifestations in life is also a mandala. So your life also becomes smooth and easy, stabilized, and it forms into a coherence. The mind also is also a mandala, and its manifestations also appear as mandala. So the mantra, as we keep on repeating, forms a pattern for our bodies, for our life force, for our mind, and for our intelligence. And this is what, once we are, you can say, attuned internally, then we can attune ourselves to the external mandala, this world, this earth. The whole earth is a mandala. We have somehow come out of that, you can say, synchronization. And as we keep on getting into a pattern, no, that's why you say a behavioral pattern. You can say love patterns, or this pattern, or that pattern. Everything. As it keeps on becoming into a pattern, properly harmonized, you will be in tune with this whole universe. That's a time when you will realize your own divinity inside, immanent, and the divinity outside, immanent in the universe, in the mandala. So these three realizations will simultaneously flash. The mandala inside, the drawing outside, and its mystical significance with the whole universe. That is the...
I guess that's also why it's good for us then to be on a daily routine, to have this pattern within our lives you know, we wake up and meditate and chant, exercise.
Exactly. The moment you come out of your pattern, it ends in chaos. It will end in disaster. Oh, yes. People might think it's boring. No, it's not boring. Your life and your energies now, all the energies now, of getting into a kind of a harmony. And only when these energies, various energies are harmonious, they flow into higher channels. When your energies are chaotic, everything is bad. Even what you are supposed to get as, you know, like good fortune or whatever, whatever, it does not come. It becomes destructive. So your own energies are in a pattern, your mind is a pattern. If they're harmonized, then everything becomes perfect. That's the difference between happiness and misery. You want happiness? Become a mandala. You'll be happy. You'll be happy. Yeah.
I love that. Become a mandala. So how can we incorporate this practice of using a mandala into our daily routines? What could we do practically?
You see, until and unless, like, one of these days after this pandemic, we can have a workshop on that. But then right now, we can use a mantra, the mantra that we have, to meditate and think deeply. And that is the starting point. And around it, everything will become harmonious. Your energies, your mind, your body, everything will form into a kind of a whole, integral whole. The mantra is a very powerful, you can say, medium to integrate everything. Once you have that, you're unstoppable. Yes, so this is the starting point. And then later on, you will find out within yourself your own pattern. Like each god and every goddess has their own mandala. You also have your own mandala.
That's so fun to think about, you know? That's so cool.
Oh, yeah. Once you get that, it's called realization.
Ah, beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we each have our own song to sing, and I guess we each have our own picture to paint, to create. Oh, yeah. Our lives are this mandala.
Yeah.
And we're all intertwined, too, between mandalas.
And that's why, you know, in Ayurveda, in homeopathy, and all these things, the first thing you do is try to correct your inner systems, you know, Vata and Pitta and Kapha. They are not interested in your symptoms. They are interested in the constituents of your body are not balanced and they need to be balanced.
Exactly.
Once you do it, everything, all the symptoms and all go away. So this is, mandalas are perfection. It is perfection in a seed form. And you have that seed within you.
Yeah.
All of us have that seed within.
And it's part of knowing who you are.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Knowing your mandala. I had an interesting experience once in India. Buddhist monks came and they created one of those really big sand mandalas.
Yes.
With all the colored sand. Yes. And it took, I mean, days and days. Mm. And they worked round the clock.
Yes.
Just making all these intricate little patterns. And it was absolutely beautiful. And then on the last day of the retreat, they just took a broom and swept it off. But then they collected all the sand and they put it in little vials and they gave it to each of us.
Right.
And they said, you know, put it back to the earth or something, you know.
Exactly, in the river water, running water specifically. You know, it is held every 12 years and it's done by the Dalai Lama. That's a huge, you can say. There's a technical name, it doesn't matter. So they spend a lot of time, and this mandala, while they're doing it, they repeat their mantra.
Right.
And as it is completed, that consciousness which is there in this universe manifests in it. And then what they do is, as I said, they destroy it. But you technically cannot destroy the mandala. It's indestructible. So though they kind of destroy the sand, the colored sand, and they give it to the earth, to the water, to the air, and all these places, and that mandala becomes all pervasive.
Right.
Yes.
And it kind of represents then the impermanence of nature.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yes, yes.
So even though I guess our bodies are going to fade away, our mandala will stay there.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Yes. In fact, in some tradition, the soul itself is looked upon as a mandala.
Each one
soul is a mandala, yes. The body comes and goes, but the mandala stays. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and that's what the idea of reincarnation is this. The mandala wants to embody itself. If it wasn't good in this body, maybe it was in a tiger's body. Okay. I cannot express this better in a tiger. Let's discard it and get into a human body. It comes into human body, which is the, you can say, epitome of all bodies, and it manifests. So this whole process of reincarnation itself is the mandala is trying to re-embody itself in different mediums so that it can express itself. And where will it take us? It will take us to perfection, because every soul is inherently perfect. It cannot be otherwise. So it's just smothered over by so many things.
Yeah.
Once those things are discarded, there you have.
Yeah. It makes sense because, you know, you were talking about vibrations. So if we're all energy and the vibration creates this visual representation of the vibration. And we see it in nature all the time, right? With like, when you look at a flower, the flower itself is kind of a mandala or a seashell. All those different sacred geometry patterns that we see in nature.
Yes. One of the meaning also sacred space. The mandala is a sacred space. And you see sea creatures, you see everything following those the circular patterns. You know, the other day I was seeing a kind of a small fish burrowing itself in the sand. And it's getting into the sand, swallowing a little sand, coming out and throwing it out, spitting it out. And it's spitting it out in a pattern, in a circular pattern. I said, my God, look at this. Yes, kind of amazing. How this thing? So that's why they're saying it is the fabric of nature. It will make you go according to its own designs.
Yeah. And what I get from that is that, you know, that little fish, nobody had to teach him how to do that. He just did it naturally. Yeah. And like flowers don't try to bloom in a certain pattern. They just do.
They just do it.
And so as humans, we can follow that example, right? We can follow that example and just be. Will bloom and express this mandala naturally.
Exactly. Sometime back, I had gone to Santa Barbara, and then I was sitting down in the monastery up there, and one of the nuns, she comes, what are you doing whole day? You never came out. I said, that is your problem. Why should you should always be doing something? Why can't I just be? I'm being myself. And she kept quiet. Oh, yeah, okay. So this idea of being is the mandala. And that is what we have to get into. And once we do that, there's nothing like that.
There you go.
You are the cosmos.
Yes.
As I say, the entire power of that universe will flow through you. It is actually flowing, but you don't know. So that's there. So it is also called the mind of God. The mandala is also called the mind of God.
Yeah. And that makes me think also of when you look at the Milky Way, the galaxy, that's mandala.
Oh, yeah.
We're a part of that. We are in that.
Yeah. Even the atom, you know, you have a core and you have a shell around.
The tiniest little thing and the most biggest thing, it's all... Yeah. It seems just magical.
Yes. Mandala also means a magic circle.
Wow. This is like so said, cool.
This word represents reality in all its phases. If there's one word that can represent reality comprehensively, it is the word mandala.
Magic circle.
You know, sannyasins, the sadhus also, monks, we used to travel in a group which is called a mandala. And the head of that circle was called a Mandaleshwara. Yeah, it is still there in the Kumbh Mela and all, you'll find the Mandaleshwara. Then there was a higher guy on top, you call the Mahamandaleshwara, the great Mandaleshwara. So you have all these. So monks used to go out, we used to always move in a circle. And the head of the circle was in the center was called a Mandaleshwara. And the head of many circles was called a Mahamandaleshwara. So here it is.
Maharaj, in Akhanda Mandala Karang Raptang Yena Charajati, that is not indicated. Akhanda Mandala Karang.
Yes, this is what? Akhanda. It is. Akhanda is it is imperishable or without any, you can say, segmentation. So what is that? Mandala Akara. It is you can say, imperishable or infinite, you can say, pattern. That is Akhanda Mandala Akara. So what is that? It's speaking about this whole universe as the mandala. Like Lisa was talking about every planet and everything has its own mandala, everything is there. So in this whole cosmos, as you say, which is the mandala akara. Akara is a form, which is the form of the mandala. And the form of the mandala is without any segmentation. It is one continuous. So that is what it's called.
And our guru is Yena Characharam Tatpadam Darshitam Yena.
Yes. The guru, you see, you must understand, in the traditions of Advaita Vedanta especially, Guru and God are one. There is no difference. So when you say Guru pervades everything, God pervades everything. And another thing is you have to understand in Advaita Vedanta, the principles. Guru, God, and your own individual soul are actually one. They have appearing as three because of Maya. So what happens is your soul will merge in the gurus and the gurus will merge into gods. That is what is Advaita Vedanta. In the dualistic traditions, you have the guru as separate and God as separate. No. In Advaita Vedanta, because Advaita did not want to do any kind of formal worship of God, no personal God. So how do we do? What do? We replace that idea of personal God with the idea of the Guru. Yes, the first pictures of Buddha was nothing but mandalas, you know, the pattern of, you can say, petals. And his two, you can imprints on the feet. For more than 200 years, Buddha was depicted only as feet, imprints of the feet and as a mandala. It was only after the Greeks with Alexander, they came and they was in what is called Afghanistan, where the idea of Greek and Indian ideas of art and sculpture, you can say, merged. And then there was the first depiction of Buddha as in a human form. Mm. That's why you see all these old Buddha statues. They were Greek features, Grecian features. So what happened was, so Buddhism was prevalent all over this place. And as we have said that mandala is indestructible, it is now slowly reviving itself. Its secrets are reviving in society, in art, in meditation, in literature. This is its indestructible aspect, merging out.
That's
so
true.
This is, so the deity can be represented as a mandala, the guru also can be represented as a mandala, and your soul also can be represented as a mandala.
I love it. That's beautiful. And yeah, it's true. Here in the West, Buddha is very popular. I mean, he's in, you see him in any home store you go into. I don't know if people actually know what this cute little chunky guy is.
But you know what?
Everywhere now.
Yeah, you know, when you look at movies or even your video games, you only see people, big people with big guns and killing and fighting and shooting each other. That is not ideal humanity. The future humanity is the Buddha, the meditative, the calm. All humanity will have to reach up to that point. So that is become is a symbol of humanity, not those guys with big guns and shooting and killing and fighting. I don't know for what they are doing. Exactly. So that can never be the ideal of humanity. The ideal is the Buddha. That's why Ramakrishna is in a meditative, you can say. Even Mother is in a meditative, you can say. Swamiji also is in a meditative. Very strange that these meditative pictures are becoming current in society. That is what humanity will be. Meditative, calm, compassionate, loving, all this.
Back to our true nature.
Exactly.
That's we really are. That's beautiful. Oh my gosh, does anybody have any questions? Because we're like past the end, but if anybody has any questions, now's a good time to, you can just unmute yourself and speak up.
Just a comment. That was totally amazing. And it there is nothing in life that doesn't have a spiral, including our eyes, our fingerprints, seashells, your absolute sand, anything. And and I just taught my granddaughter was doing spirals. And I said, honey, that's the sign of all life. And I have a comment. And if you can, when I meditate sometimes, the energy circles one way and then stops and circles another way in my vision. What does that mean, if anything?
There is an obstruction.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. So I just keep going just within deeper, right? Yes. Okay.
Yes.
All right. This is such a gift. I want you to do this again in a workshop.
Okay.
Lisa, thank you. I have one other thing and then I will stop. It's Lisa's birthday today.
Yes.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Thank you. Well, I can't thank you more than
with all of you. You guys are amazing. Swami, I adore you. I can't wait to have you over to my house and then of us can
have
the labyrinth and draw our mantras.
We will do those drawings and all those various exercises.
I mean, I have all the art supplies I bought them. They're just sitting here waiting.
Yeah, we were supposed to kind of have that workshop.
Yeah.
We spend the whole day kind of.
And I have a fire pit too, so we can do a special puja. We'll do it. We'll definitely, hopefully like this summer, you know, when things open up and we're all safe and everything. So thank you, Swami. Thank you, everybody. Say thank you, Swami.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Swami.
Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Yes, yes. Jai Ma.
Thanks, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you, Anu.